Blog Talk Radio.
The following broadcast is brought to you by the iGolf Sports Network.
Golf Talk Live is sponsored by the iGolf Sports Network and Golf Tips Magazine. Here's Andrew to tell you more about our sponsors.
iGolf Sports is a live stream broadcast and media production company providing quality programming designed to attract the golfing enthusiast. And Golf Tips, the game's most in-depth instruction magazine, including reviews on the latest equipment, tips from top teaching professionals, all designed to help you improve from tee to green. Welcome to Golf Talk Live with your host, Ted Odorico. Join Ted each week as he speaks with some of the best in golf. This week's special guest will join us a bit later. But first up is another great discussion on Coach's Corner. So let's introduce tonight's Coach's Corner panel.
All right. Good evening, everybody. And once again, welcome to Golf Talk Live. I'm your host, Ted Odorico, and welcome to Season 12. We got an interesting episode for you tonight, another exciting one featuring, of course, to start things off with an incredible Coach's Corner panel. Joining me tonight is Jim Endicott and Jamie Leno-Zimron. I'll tell you a little bit about them in a moment. But I'm also thrilled to have Golf Breaks by PGA Tour as our travel feature sponsor tonight. Joining us this week on the special travel segment is our travel expert and co-host, Robert Kaufman. Alongside him is our special guest for the evening, Jerry Rose, who is the VP of Brand Management at Communication Links. And then later in the show, I'm going to have my exclusive interview with Bobby Steiner, the Director of Instruction at Horseshoe Bay Resort in Texas. He's going to be my exclusive interview, of the evening. So you want to make sure you stick around for everything. We've got a lot of great stuff happening. Really excited, again, to have the travel segment. Of course, that's going to be every couple of weeks. And Robert and I will have a different guest each time. And we'll talk more about that in a little bit. But first up, we're going to introduce the Coach's Corner panel. And then we'll get into tonight's discussion. First up, of course, is Jim Endicott. Jim's been teaching golf for over 38 years. He's a former Golf Digest School General Manager, a seven-time PGA Award winner, including the 2022 North Florida PGA Section Patriot Award and two North Florida PGA Youth Development Awards. Currently, he is the Director of Instruction at Royal St. Cloud Golf Links in St. Cloud, Florida, and he is a Golf Tips Top 25 instructor and contributor to the magazine. Also joining the panel tonight is Jamie Leno-Zimron. She's a Class A LBJA teacher professional. She's also a sixth-degree Aikido black belt, a somatic psychologist, corporate speaker, and mind-body fitness trainer. She also graduated Phi Beta Kappa at Stanford University, creator of Ki Golf, The Centered Way. I'm going to welcome Jim onto the show because it looks like Jamie isn't quite here yet. But Jim, thanks for joining me tonight on the Coach's Corner panel.
Thanks for having me. It's always a great opportunity to be here and talk golf, as we both love to do, and I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, I'm glad to have you, and you've now been on for a few seasons, and glad to have you join the group, and you're getting to be, as they say, like old hat here on Coach's Corner, so I want to thank you for taking time and doing that. So we're going to start. I'll keep an eye out for Jamie. It looks like she may be a little bit behind. Hopefully she'll be able to join us, but if not, you and I will certainly hold the fort down and make our way through. Just a quick note, the Coach's Corner segment typically in most evenings goes the full hour, first hour of the show. I'm going to cut it off during the broadcast with the travel segment to about 45 minutes, and we plug that 20-minute travel segment in there before I do my interview guest. So on those nights, Coach's Corner will be a little bit shorter, so that'll make it easier for you and I, Jim, if we go it alone. So first question up I've got for you is I want you to imagine that you've just finished an assessment with an intermediate golfer, not a beginner, but certainly not a high-caliber golfer quite yet. So you've done an assessment and discover that overall they have a pretty good understanding of the basic fundamentals, are struggling with their consistency. So how do you proceed from here? What do you do at this point? You kind of got an idea of where they are right now. You know the level of golfer that they are. And they have a general pretty good understanding of the basics. but they're still struggling with that consistency. So how do you go from here?
Well, as any lesson begins, we do an assessment, as you described there. And part of that assessment is an interview of the player and getting an understanding of what are their goals, what are their aspirations, what's their history. And from there, we can make a determination of a plan, and that plan is also developed with the interaction of the player. And so as we look at what they're doing, we need to understand where they might be inconsistent. Are they a player that let's take as a right-handed player who is swinging to the left and curving the ball to the right? And is there inconsistency, the fact that sometimes they curve it to the right, sometimes they square that club face up to the path and they see a pull? Well, I would give them some understanding of why the ball was curving to the right, the fact that the club face was looking to the right of the path, path being swung to the left of the target. And the ones that they see flying to the left, they have still swung the club to the left. They simply squared the face to that path. And so I would educate them on the fact that the direction they're swinging the club is consistent, even though they see a little difference in the ball flight. And that has to do with the relationship of the club face to the swing path. And so we would work first on trying to create the situation where that club face matches the path more frequently. That would show more consistency in the flight of the golf ball being to the left of the target. We then would address the fact that they're swinging it to the left and what is causing that. Could it be ball position? Could it be that their shoulders are to the left? The ball position could simply be too far forward. They're making a good golf swing, but because it's so far forward, the club has already been working back to the inside. When it strikes cause also with the ball forward like that, could cause the shoulders to be the left of the target, again causing the golf swing to travel to the left. So simply making that ball position more neutral, i.e. moving it in the direction of their trail foot, the foot that's farthest from the target, that could square the shoulders. And then we would show them how to swing the golf club down from the inside. But I would want to be able to show them that even though the flight of the golf ball sometimes was dead straight left and sometimes slicing, they were consistent with the direction of swing, which could give them some comfort that we don't have too many things to work on. We had to match that club face to the path more regularly. And then we would adjust the path.
Well said. And you know, what I'm hearing too, Jim, is this. Obviously, the assessment is going to open and give you a certain amount of insight. But really at that point, because they're an intermediate golfer, they've obviously got some skill level. It's really now about identifying and isolating what's causing the inconsistency. What's the problem? Because as you pointed out, as an example, you know, they could have a pretty good swing, but it may be something as simple as their ball position, or it could be something else, how they're, you know, coming in at impact. So there's, you know, other variables that need to be considered. And so I think, you know, anytime, and I'm saying this to the audience now, anytime that you, you know, regardless of what level of a player you are, it's always good to start off with an assessment, especially if you're working with somebody new. To kind of see where things are at and then sort of focus on the specifics of and isolate those areas that, because a lot of times, and Jim, correct me if I'm wrong, but a lot of times what ends up happening is when they have, you know, pretty good fundamentals, but are still not that consistent, they start changing everything. They start, you know, trying to reinvent the wheel and end up making it a much worse problem than maybe what they started out with. Correct?
Absolutely, 100%. What happens is if they don't understand the root cause of the inconsistency, they start fiddling, and in actual fact, they exacerbate the situation and they create additional issues. I like to look at it from the perspective of, I always in that assessment am asking questions, and I ask why till I get to the root cause. And in this situation that I described, the root cause could simply have been the fact that the ball was too far forward, causing him to swing to the left. And it's kind of what came first, the chicken or the egg? What came first, the pull or the slice? That ball being forward, they may be seeing the pull, and they react to that by trying to hold the club face more at the target so that the ball didn't go to the left, and that caused that face to be open to the path, causing the slice. Conversely, it could have been that they were already arriving the club face to the right, and they in turn said, I don't like to see my ball to the right. I'm going to swing more to the left, not knowing that the reason the ball was curving to the right was the face was looking to the right of the path, and it's simply a grip change. The root issue was the grip. And so their consistency right. comes from us getting back to the root cause. And so we ask questions of why, until we can't ask that question anymore. And then we start to work on that item.
Exactly. And, you know, again, it's just to reiterate, it's important that you have these assessments done. And it doesn't necessarily just mean at the beginning of the year. It's good to have these assessments sort of follow up as the year progresses, especially if you're working with an instructor or coach throughout the season. It's a good way to sort of evaluate where things are at. So it's always good to do that. And that's what they're there for. They're there to really point out the areas that need the most help. This is really kind
and
of
quite
a simple
honestly,
question. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, Ted. Quite honestly, that assessment should occur every single lesson. There should be an assessment
right.
of where are we at, what did we work on, and where are we headed.
Yep, great point. No, you're exactly right. So let me ask you this. Here, again, I'm going to keep an eye out for Jamie. I have a feeling that maybe it could be a time issue or something for her, but we'll plug through this, you and I, for the next little bit. So group lessons are something that are pretty common with most instructors, and I think really it's something that could benefit really any level of golfer. But what are some of the benefits? Obviously, you know, it's good to have that one-on-one with your coach, but sometimes there's some things, benefits that can be derived from working in a group lesson format. Maybe you could touch on a couple that that you have found that have been beneficial for maybe some of your students or people that you had involved in a group-type lesson.
You know, I love group situations. From a learning perspective especially, and this probably will sound a little contradictory, if you will, it actually causes less nerves for the participants. Sure, they're nervous of other people maybe seeing them, but there is an intimidation factor of having an instructor standing behind you throughout a one-hour lesson. And
right.
the thing I love about group lessons is, and when we did the golf schools, both with John Jacobs and Golf Digest, we ran either on a 4-to-1 or a 5-to-1 ratio. That would be 4 students to an instructor or 5 students to 1 instructor. And we had an hour and 15 minutes to teach all 5. And so as the instructor, one, I had to be pretty on target in the assessment, the diagnosis, the explanation of that, and get them the fix they're going to work on. And the beauty of the group situation is when you've given the information to the player, they now have an opportunity when you go to the next player down to work on that information without the intimidation of the instructor standing there observing every golf swing. And so they get to fiddle with it. They get to explore. They get to have some discovery of processing that information and moving it into an action without that watchful eye right behind them throughout. Yet, as the instructor, and a good instructor would be, say, working with the second or the third student, but as you're doing that, you've got one eye kind of double-checking what's happening with that first student or that second student if you're already to your third, and you see that they did it. And so you can encourage them, give them some feedback, give them some encouragement that they're doing it. You reduce the intimidation factor. They get to have the discovery time. They get to fiddle with it. And then you come back and you get to reinforce what you've been working on, making sure they're doing it the way you want them to. And or if they're having successes with it, if there's a second step in that lesson, you can give it to them. And then again, you walk on down the line and they get to mess with it. They get to experiment. They get to explore. They get to discover just like they are when you're not there. The glory of it is they're doing that and you're still there with that, you know, I call it the parent eye. You know, as parents of kids, we always see everything. You get to see what's going on down there and you get to give them a little encouragement while they're messing with it. And if they're not quite doing it right, you zip down there, give them another little tip to it, and then move on and let them go. It's amazing to me how often I have given an instruction in this group setting, and the player understands it. They do it, but they might be struggling a little bit with it. And it's amazing how often, as soon as I walk to the next player, boom, they get it, and they're having successes. So I love the group setting. In fact, I used to market, I market my lessons where you can come one or two people in that lesson because it's so productive for me.
Yeah, and again, you raise a really great point. There is an intimidation factor. You know, people don't understand who have never gone down this path of taking a golf lesson. I mean, you know, here you're dealing in many cases. I mean, obviously there's newer instructors coming in, but you know, you got somebody like yourself, Jim, who's been around, you know, in this game close to 40 years. That's a pretty intimidating thing, especially for a new person coming into the game that's never maybe picked up a club before or not played. Now they've got to stand in front of this person and essentially perform. Creates a lot of anxiety for people, especially, you know, again, people that have never played before. So it's always a good idea to, you know, reduce the anxiety or stress levels as much as possible, for especially for new students. Once they get comfortable and are able to see the results and build some confidence, then you know then they can kind of let the shoulders down, relax a little bit more. But yeah, it's very intimidating, especially for new players along. So some great points there. This is kind of an interesting one too. You know, tour players to most of us seem unflappable. But the truth is they suffer from maybe some of the same on-course anxieties the rest of us do. So as a coach, what can you do to reinforce a positive mindset? So you've got a high-caliber player who's, you know, most people would think is, hey, they can, you know, no problem. They're hitting some great shots. They're maybe even winning tournaments. But they have their own issues that they're dealing with out there. So as a coach to a higher-level player, how do you deal with something like that when you know that they're having that on-course anxiety?
Well, the unfortunate thing in the game of golf is our mind continues to replay that poor shot, that ineffective shot, that ball that went out of bounds, or that ball that came up short and dropped in the water. Unfortunately, our mind continues to replay that. And so we have to work in our routine of process to not allow there to be the time to reflect on a poor performance or a bad shot or the history of, boy, I'm at this hole again, and every time I'm here, I miss the green. So we have to have a process in place that there are certain ingredients that we have to go through, and they are all targeted at the job at hand. For example, that routine may be such that the very first thing we do, we look at the lie. Once we've looked at the lie, we get our yardage to the flag. Once we get our yardage to the flag, we determine I want to be just short of that flag because it's in the back of the green and there's water over. So I want to be about 10 steps short. And when we think about yardage, 10 yards, that's only 30 feet. Well, proximity is a hole for shots on tour from the fairway is an average of about 28 feet. So is 30 feet a bad thing? I'd say it's a pretty darn good thing, especially when it avoids right. the water behind. But if I think about it and I say, okay, I'm 150 to the flag. I want to be 10 short of it. Now I've got a 140-yard shot. Then I assess, is it uphill or downhill? Well, it's a little uphill, so it's going to be an extra 3 yards of carry to get to that 140, so now it's 143. Well, it's into the wind, or let's put it the other way. It's downwind, and I think that's going to be a 5-yard wind. Now I'm 138. The lie is conducive to a 138 shot. Now I'm going to select a golf club that hits my golf ball 138. So I have gone through a process of determining how far is it, but where do I want to be, and where I want to be has eliminated any of the other challenges if I perform at a level of, on a scale of 1 to 10, if I perform a 7, I'm going to be good. And so now I'm going to hit a 138-yard shot. And that process for me, and what I try to encourage my players to get, is a time that it's quick enough that there's no time in between to worry about water right, big deep bunker left, and those sorts of things. It's all a positive direction of I'm going to do A, then B, then C, then D, then E, pull the club, bang, rehearsal swing, visualize it, hit it. I don't have time to worry with my ability to perform. I can only have the thoughts I am going to perform. And so I really hone in on that process versus result. And when they're struggling, they're thinking results prior to process. So we have to reverse that and say, I have to do it through this process. This process will produce the results I want.
Well said. Great explanation. I really think it's important that people understand, that they're going to have situations on the, I mean, you can be a phenomenal ball striker. You can hit the shots, pretty much where you need to, but even the best of the best have some anxiety out in the golf course. And the more prepared you are mentally is going to help reinforce the positives in your physical game. And a lot of players, I mean, we've seen this, Jim, countless times, over the years on tour with players who you would think, hey, they've got it in the bag, all of a sudden start developing, issues out in the golf course for whatever reason, whatever the cause is, and have just sort of, the wheels have fallen off the bus. And, nobody understands, what's going on. They just think, well, they've just sort of crashed and burned. And a lot of times there's something that it could be the fact that now they're leading the event. I mean, there's all kinds of variables. So it's important to really sort of reinforce with a positive mindset. And you're going to hit some bad shots. You're going to be, dealing with some difficult situations. But the more prepared you are mentally, in other words, you have to put just as much into your mental game as you do your physical game. And in fact, probably more so, to be successful in whatever level of play you want to do. So some great points that you brought up. This is one here that's kind of one of those questions you kind of have to, dance between the two parties. And you'll understand when I throw this one out there. So junior golfers who you know, for you coaches out there that are working with junior golfers who show potential, often feel undue pressure from overactive parents. So as a golf coach, how do you find that right balance with the student while at the same time encouraging the parents to be, you know, play a more supportive role as opposed to being that helicopter parent? You mentioned, you know, kind of keeping an eye on it, which is important. But sometimes parents get too involved, and what ends up happening is they get too involved, they get too intrusive between the coach and the student, and then they put undue pressure on the child, and interest suddenly, you know, is on something else because the child feels that undue pressure. So how do you find that balancing act between the two? How do you handle the student in a case like that? And what do you, you know, give us a, you know, an overview of the conversation you might have with the parents?
Well, the very first thing I would do when I see that situation is I would create the time in the lesson where the player and I are having conversation away from the parent. And I would go back to what we talked about very early in the assessment. And that assessment with that player would be to get an understanding of, what do they want? What are their aspirations? Do they want the, are they congruent with what the parent is wanting? The parent wants them to play Division I college golf, and yet the kid wants to play a little high school golf and then go off to college and get his degree. Well, very conflicting situations there. And so once we can find what exactly the player wants, then I like to have the conversation in goal setting with the parent sitting there next to us. But again, I would direct the goals and the discussion to the player. And once the parent chimes in, I would kind of say, hold on just a second. Let's listen to the player here. Let's hear what they have to say and what they want. And let's find if that matches what you want. And sometimes that parent will be even more overbearing at that point. And I will say to them, listen, if we're running this plan on your agenda, they're not going to buy in. Now, if your agenda and their agenda is the same, we got a chance. But if their agenda is 180 degree different than yours, all we're going to do is frustrate you, parent, because they're not going to want to perform to your expectations. And we want this player to perform. And I've seen it happen time and time again where we had that situation. Parent wants Division I college golf. Player wants to be a recreational player. We put the plan together for the player in becoming successful at high school golf. And somewhere along the line, the bug caught them. And they said, you know what? I've had some successes here. This is really cool. This is fun. I do want to play college golf. And so they transitioned to the agenda of the parent without the parent's influence. They transitioned because they bought into the plan. They bought into what we were trying to do to meet their needs, and then all of a sudden their needs changed. But if we go down the other path and we immediately jump into the parent's agenda, that will likely run this player away. I saw it with a boy that I played high school golf with. Dad wanted him to play Division I college golf. He did. He got a full ride to Arizona State. Nice program. First semester he quit school, because it was just overwhelming and too much of a burden to try and perform to what Dad wanted. But if that would have been his agenda, if we would have converted his agenda to Dad's by his performance, been a whole different story. So I try to engage the player. Let's get them to let the parent know where they want to go, and then let's go down that path and see what happens, because that agenda may change.
Yeah, and again, that's an excellent point, because, you know, quite often if somebody is seeing results and a certain level of success, that is going to encourage them to maybe want to go. And that doesn't necessarily, it's not a guarantee, but it certainly is going to give them, you know, if they see that they're starting to bear fruit from, you know, with their result, that's going to set the stage for potentially going to another level. But you're right. If you hit them, it goes back to what we're talking about with the group lessons. If you hit them with that pressure up front, and they maybe run that course, and even if they're a pretty good player, if they're not ready or they haven't convinced themselves that that's the path they want to take, then they're more apt to collapse under that pressure and suddenly go down a different path because they're not living up to somebody else's expectation and ultimately end up dropping out, like you said, going, you know, the first year and suddenly dropping out because they just can't meet the demand of the other person, which is, in this case, their parent. So very important for parents that may be listening that has somebody, a junior golfer in that camp. It's great to have that vision and desire to want your child to get to that level, whether they have the ability or not, but it has to be their decision and not yours. Certainly nothing wrong with encouraging to at least, you know, consider it. Nothing wrong with that. And even including that in early discussions with the coach, but it cannot be pushed to the forefront because as you said, Jim, it not all the time, but in many cases has a less than desirable result. So I think what you're suggesting here is, I think, a much better path to take. All right. I want to throw this question in. This is really dealing with better players. And I'm talking about our much lower handicap, even scratch players. Better players find it harder to shave strokes off their round. They've gotten to a level where, you know, if they can shave one or two strokes off, they're pretty happy. You know, they're not a 25-30 handicap anymore. What can you do as a coach to improve a player at this level? Where do you go from here? They're shooting low numbers. They're doing that. Is there anything you can do to make them even a more accomplished player?
Absolutely, 100%. First of all, they have to understand what the expectation and how quickly. Let's take the example. Let's say that they're a three handicap and they want to be a plus one. So we've got four shots to get. We have to understand the expectation of what it takes to get there. Four shots at that level, it takes a little bit more, I should say a lot more work than four shots if you're a 35 handicap. And so going back to the idea we talked earlier of the assessment and the ongoing assessment, that assessment gets a little bit more detailed in what we're looking at. We have to start looking at some very specific things, such as not just fairways hit, greens hit. They could hit many fairways and hit a lot of greens and be a three handicap. Because when they're hitting the greens, their proximity to the hole is 40 to 50 feet. Well, that brings in a number of three putts at that distance. Whereas if we're looking at it and say, okay, now our proximity to the hole is 30 feet. Now I don't three putt as often. So it's not just a matter of hitting the green. It's where did I hit the green? How far from the hole am I? Also, when I'm missing the green, what's happening? Am I getting it up and down? It's one thing to say I'm not getting it up and down. Well, I could be chipping it onto the green and leaving myself 10, 15 footers. The missed green, but if I'm leaving 15 feet, I'm not making as many of those as if I'm leaving a foot. So we have to look again at proximity to the hole from our short game shots. We have to look at when I'm missing the green, where am I missing the green? Am I short-siding myself? Am I setting myself up for failure by having to flip it up over a bunker to the green falling away from me to a tight pin? Or am I missing it short right in the collar and I've got a 50-foot chip shot just straight up the green? Two very different opportunities for getting it up and down. A statistic of missing the green doesn't tell me the whole story. Where did I miss the green? What was the situation? Am I having those situations on a regular basis? So there's some course management of assessment that we would want to look at. We would want to look at what are my frequency of making putts at certain distances. Am I hitting many greens and they're inside 30 feet and I'm two-putting them all? Even if I'm inside 10, well, if I'm inside 10 and I'm two-putting them all, I need to be working on those inside 10-footers. Then that takes us, once we've done the assessment, it takes us to a couple different things. One, how am I going through that process as we talked about earlier? What is my process? Is my process making the right decision of where to hit this shot? Pin back left. Should I be playing a shot that is pin high and to the right? Probably not pin high, probably a few steps short of pin high. Pin's in the middle, but on the left-hand side. Now maybe I'm going to play pin high and to the right because there's a huge, deep, cavernous bunker to the left of that flag. So the assessment of understanding my performance in certain areas gives me work in my process of making decisions. Then in that assessment, if I'm finding that I'm having a lot of very straightforward chip shots and I'm rolling them up there, but I'm leaving them between 5 and 10 feet from the hole, well, now I need to start looking at how am I performing that chip shot? Is it technique that's causing the distance control issue? Is it a plan situation that's causing the distance control issue? So the assessment becomes a lot more detailed, which gives us a more refined approach to improving the performance, whether that's a refined approach to visualization or decision-making, or is it a refined approach to how I'm practicing to execute the decisions I'm making. So the assessment for a player wanting to go down just a few shots when they're a single digit becomes even more important from a detail perspective, as I've described there, to find that extra shot here or there.
Yeah, I think a lot of players, when they get to that level, you know, I hear them say, you know, I'm trying to get those few extra strokes. I'm not sure. Usually if they've gotten to that level, they kind of have a really good understanding of their game, and they know where their weaknesses are. But sometimes, you know, it takes a different set of eyes to look at it. You know, I remember, you know, Billy Casper, I was talking to his son about his dad, Billy. And he was asked a similar question, you know, what do you do? You know, you're a good player and, you know, I'm struggling to get those few extra strokes. And he would ask them, he said, well, you know, where are you ending up on the green? How far away? And he said, you know, I might get 15, 20, you know, feet away. Sometimes I might get a little bit less. And he said, well, what you need to do, first off, he said, hit it closer to the hole. You know, if you're mm-hmm. a good player and you're getting onto the green and two quite often, but you're a good distance away, and you're missing those putts, well, first off, he said to hit a little bit closer and then see if it's, you know, you're putting as well, because, you know, so there's a lot of different factors that go in, but I think for better players, you know, they have a tough time. You know, it's easy if you've got a 25 handicap to drop them 4 or 5 strokes. You know, if you've got a guy that can't break 100 and you get him breaking 90 or get him down to a 90, that's a big drop. But not so easy when you've got a higher caliber player for a lot of people from their perspective to be able to shave those few extra strokes off. So it takes a little bit more insight and understanding of pinpointing exactly where those strokes can be saved. And a lot of times it may not be as in the areas that they are traditionally looking at. So some great points again that you brought up. So here's a question, and I'm going to let you approach this really any way you want, but I'll lay it out, and then you decide how you want to approach this. So, you know, as the coach of a player, and it can be a professional or otherwise, what are you going to do to help them prepare for an upcoming tournament or event? So, again, you can approach it from somebody that you're working with on a regular basis, that might be a different approach than maybe somebody that's come up and said, hey, Jim, I got an event in 3-4 weeks time. What can you do to help me get tournament ready? So you take whichever one you prefer to do and or both and just give us a little bit of insight on how you would handle a situation like that.
Well, I'll take the one that you said. They come up to you and say, I've got an event in 3 weeks, whether that's somebody that I'm working with on a regular basis for their skills or it's somebody new to me, I would approach it very much the same way. First, we would do an assessment of how are they hitting it now. How is their performance from a shot-making capability right now? And if that requires some refinement, we would spend some time in block-type work where it's ball in a good situation, good, maybe it's on a short tee, and we're alignment sticks on the ground, and we're just making sure technically we're ready to go. And that would probably be that first week. The second week, we'd start getting into more of the playability of ourselves. Our drills would now become playing-type drills. We've all heard the idea of play around the golf on the range, pick a fairway and hit your shot and imagine what your second shot would be and that sort of thing. And I would get them around the green, and we'd start doing, instead of technique work, we'd start doing different things for feel, where they go to a situation and they're going to hit from a certain location off the green to a flag on the green. They're going to hit it low, medium trajectory, high trajectory. See how I'm seeing the ball fly. And so I'm going into a more of a visualization and a feel feedback mode at that point. And then the week prior, we're going to go on the golf course and we're going to take that process of feel visualization. We've got the technique in order and we're going to now put it on the golf course. Maybe that's at our home course. If we're such that we could be at the venue and we could do multiple rounds there of seeing the golf course and mapping a plan and seeing where we want to get shots. If the flag is on the right-hand side, where would I like to be when I hit to that green? And so we start to make a plan that we can put our visualization and our feel together to execute that plan. So I kind of work towards a crescendo, if you will, of the widest part of that is the visualization, the playability, using my skills that I have and putting them into play, putting them in my process on the green, on the golf course, and establishing a plan. I'm going to hit this off of this tee if it's downwind. I'm going to hit this off of that tee if it's into the wind. I want to be at this target, and I start to map those things out. And so it's a lot about getting ourselves to a playing state, not a mechanics state.
Got it. Well said. And just very quickly, we only got literally a minute or two left, but maybe you can answer this sort of follow-up to that. And so this same player comes back now after the event shouldering a big loss. How do you help them, number one, deal with the loss, and then what steps do you now take to prepare them for the next event?
Well, the very first question I would ask them is, what went well? What did you do well? And I would also follow that up to say, and your reply cannot be nothing. You have to find something you did well, because I want to build them up. I want them to see that they have a lot of good things going on. And maybe they hit it a little bit right in that particular time it went out of bounds, where if that was a little bit right on hole number four, it would have been just in the right rough. And so I want them to see what they did well, and then they cannot look at what they need to improve on until at least the day after or 2 days after the event. That way we're looking at things objectively, and we can make a plan and say, you know what, I just didn't pitch it well. Okay, so we're going to now put into our practice preparing for the next event a little more visualization, a little more work with feel, touch, on pitching. So we start with what's good. We reflect a couple days later on what we need to work on, and then we go work on that and put it back in the same process we just described. Technique into playability and visualization, and put it to a plan for the next event.
Sounds great. I like that. What a great way to end the segment. Jim, I want to thank you for joining me tonight on Coach's Corner. Obviously, Jamie was not able to join us tonight. We'll get her the next time. But I want to thank you for pitching in and giving some great tips to hopefully parents out there that have juniors that are playing, and just some of the regular folks that want to get out there and have some more fun. Jim's just giving you some great advice. If you're coming a little bit late into the segment, you can go to blogtalkradio.com/golftalklive after the rest of the show, and you can listen to the recorded version. But Jim, as always, thank you very much for joining me on the panel. And if you wanted to very quickly let the folks know the best way they can reach out.
They can reach out to me either on my cell phone at 407-460-9420 or via email at jim@endicottgolf.com. And love to talk golf as we have tonight, and love to help people play better golf. And thanks again for having me on, Ted.
A pleasure. Thank you, Jim. Have a great weekend, and I'll see you next time on the Coach's Corner panel. Have a great weekend.
You too. Thank you.
All right. As we get ready to fire up our travel segment brought to you by Golf Breaks by PGA Tour, we're going to take a quick message from Golf Tips Magazine, so we'll be right back.
The following ad is sponsored by Golf Tips Magazine.
Are you tired of being short off the tee? And what about those three putts? Forget about it. It's time you got serious about your game. Golf Tips, the most in-depth magazine in the industry. For over 30 years, Golf Tips has delivered expert content such as the latest golf instruction from America's top pros, simple to follow practice and game improvement drills, fitness and mental game tips, equipment, training aids, accessory and apparel reviews, golf destinations and travel tips for every budget, and so much more. Don't miss a single issue. Go to golftipsmag.com and subscribe today.
This golf travel segment is sponsored by Golf Breaks by PGA Tour. If you are tired of researching and planning your group's golf trips, let the travel experts at Golf Breaks by PGA Tour help. Get a customized golf trip with their hassle-free service and save money with their guaranteed best prices. Right now, Golf Breaks by PGA Tour is offering up to $200 off your next golf trip, exclusive to Golf Talk Live listeners. Simply quote Golf Tips 200 online or over the phone. Terms apply. Go to golfbreaks.com to start planning your next golf trip today.
All right. Welcome, everybody, to our special travel segment here on Golf Talk Live. Joining me, of course, is my very good friend, internationally published golf and travel writer and award-winning photographer, Robert Koppen, and my co-host, of course. And joining us this evening is our special travel guest, Jerry Rose, who is the Vice President of Brand Management with Communication Links. I'm going to tell you a little bit about him, and then we'll bring the two of them on, and we'll have our special travel segment discussion tonight. Jerry, of course, has been with Communication Links now from its since its beginning in 1993. He is accredited in public relations by the Public Relations Society of America and is a former board member of the organization. He specializes in media relations, brand development, familiarization trips, and messaging, particularly with regards to Communication Links luxury golf and hospitality clients. And, of course, my good friend and buddy who is travel expert and serves as travel editor for Golf Tips Magazine, as well as a contributor to other publications, which can be viewed on his website, pitcherperfect.com. Please welcome my co-host, Robert Koppen, and our special travel guest tonight, Jerry Rose.
Well, hey,
good evening, guys. Welcome.
Well, thank you.
How are you guys doing?
Public
doing well. Thank you.
Quite important intros.
Well, yeah. I try. We've only got a short time, so I had to get it all in there quick. I know there's lots of other good stuff to talk about, but I had to edit them down a little bit and get quick. So, as I mentioned, Robert, of course, you're helping to co-host this segment. So I'm going to I'm going to start things off, and then, Robert, I'm going to turn it over to you in a second. And, Jerry, thank you for joining us tonight. I appreciate it very much. And
thanks for having
and
me.
We
really
appreciate
forward to it.
Yeah, we appreciate your insight as well. So, Jerry, just tell us a little bit. Give us kind of an overview, if you wouldn't mind, of Communication Links, what you guys do. I touched on just a fraction of it. Just give us a brief overview. And then, Robert, you can just kick it up a notch, and I know you've got some questions lined up. So I'm going to turn my mic off, turn it over to you quickly, Jerry, for a quick kind of overview, and then, Robert, you pick up.
Okay, sounds good.
Good to go.
Sounds good. Yeah, so Communication Link, like you said, began in 1993. I was very shortly out of college at that point, and we kind of hit the mark at the time when, like, golf was in its first or, well, most – previous to this, boom, right? So it worked out really well. And what we like to do, I should go back and say, so one of the principals of the company, he's a former golf professional, spent a lot of years, you know, behind the counter and helping people, you know, play the game better and things like that. And then Dave Gilbertson and I, we both come from a journalism, public relations kind of side. So we melded those two together. And what we do is really we try to help people in the golf business tell their story, you know. I always say, like, you know, like, what do you want to be when you grow up? You know, has its own little vein, right? Like, it fits in the market differently than the others, at least you hope it does. And we help them figure out what that is and how they can connect with customers and tell their story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's awesome. Well, good. Well, Jerry, it sounds like we both have a bit of longevity in the golf arena, so to speak.
Man, you're not kidding.
Combined, I won't even say how many combined years, but it's a few.
It's a few.
But anyway, I really want to kind of zero in on the Scottsdale, Phoenix area. I know that's where you're based, and that's an area that you know like the back of your hand. So I just want to get a quick overview from you. You know, for first-time travelers to the Scottsdale, Phoenix area, you know, those that maybe have never played desert golf, you know,
sure.
What makes it so different than other
okay.
styles, such as, you know, parkland or links, you know, what's the draw to desert golf?
Yeah, sure thing. So first, let me just say, great resource, especially if you've never been here before, you kind of want to get the lay of the land. It's a website. It's a client of ours. It's the Visitors Bureau for Scottsdale, and the website is called experiencescottsdale.com. It's just
okay.
those two words together, .com.
Yep.
It's got a lot of stuff, and it's not just golf. It has golf, but it has all the information about the events, the restaurants, the resorts, you know, all the, you know, the activities and things like that to do. It's a great resource for people to just get the lay of the land, figure out where do I want to stay, what do I want to do, how do I want to spend my time. And then so to your question about desert golf, Scottsdale's in the Sonoran Desert. And the Sonoran Desert is very different than, let's say, like the desert in Southern California, like Palm Springs or like around Las Vegas or any other desert like that, Southern Utah. It's a very lush desert. And that sounds ridiculous as an oxymoron, but it's true.
right.
It's like if you go along, there's lots of trees, lots of cactus, lots of different types of sages and flowering. Like you look at it, sometimes you realize, especially like right now, there are our wildflowers. We've had a pretty good our winter rains were pretty good, and so our wildflowers is just now starting to get warm enough where they're blooming, and it's going to be absolutely beautiful from now until like the end of June. It's going to blow you away. So
nice.
That desert environment, like I said, is very, very different. It's not as stark. It's not as foreboding, maybe. It's certainly rugged, but it's not as stark or foreboding as some of the other deserts. And also, the other thing that people don't realize with this desert is there's so much elevation change. Scottsdale is long and skinny, and it's in the Valley of the Sun, and the Valley of the Sun is rimmed by mountains. And so if you go, like you start like at the airport, right, Sky Harbor Airport, that's about 900 feet in elevation, and it starts climbing. As you go north and east through Scottsdale, it climbs really steadily. So a place like True North, which is, you know, obviously one of our marquee golf courses, they're at around 2,600 feet in elevation. You keep going up to – you know, up like where Desert Mountain is, like up in the very northern reaches of Scottsdale, those golf courses, parts of those golf courses are over 3,000 feet in elevation. So you get – the topography is very, very is very varied, which is a hard thing to say.
Yeah, no, that's a very interesting point, because you just don't realize that when you're in a desert environment that you can also be 3,000-4,000 feet high. You know,
yeah, exactly. It gets
and
up there.
You feel it. You start to feel it.
Absolutely, you do. So that gives you, when you're on the golf course itself, the golf courses themselves, they're very different than like a Parkland golf course or something like that. I mean, we do have Parkland golf courses here. We don't have anything that's really a Lynx golf course. We have some that are inspired by Lynx golf courses, like Talking Sticks Oklahoma
right.
course, the Coeur Crenshaw, or Ambiente at Camelback. They're Lynx inspired, but they're not true Lynx golf courses. Some of the older golf courses are the very traditional Parkland golf courses, like it's like a McCormick Ranch, or maybe like an Orange Tree or something like that. And those are it's a nice variety of golf to have, because it's not just target golf. You can kind of find what you want and what feels comfortable to you and take it from there.
Right.
The golf courses that people see like in Golf Digest or Golf Magazine or something like that, the ones that are really, really popular, Wekopaw, Troon North, Greyhawk, TPC Scottsdale, like that, those golf courses tend to be, at the higher elevation, they have great long views back into the valley of the mountains. They got rocky outcroppings. They have these deep desert arroyos that are just, they're very shady, and they're full of trees and cactus and things like that. And it's just a different look that you don't get anywhere else. From a player's perspective, it presents a little bit, some challenges sometimes from a player's perspective, because when you stand on the tee at a lot of the desert golf courses, they look narrow, but if you pay attention to the GPS or yardage book, if you use the yardage book or something like that, you'll realize that there's plenty of room. The designers have been very, very smart about how they use the turf they use. The golf courses, they don't have wall-to-wall grass, but where they do have grass, it's very useful. It's very much where you want to hit the ball. And I don't mean – you don't feel hamstrung. You can hit driver all day long at a lot of these golf courses, but – You feel scared sometimes when you stand on a tee. You just got to trust it. We talked about the elevation of the ball, depending on where you are and depending on where you're coming from. Like you're coming from California, like you, and sea level, the ball's going to fly farther. It's generally dry here. The air is dry. It's not high humidity. So the ball, that's going to give you a little more carry. Depending upon the season, the grass is going to be – it's going to be drier. It's not the ground hardly ever wet, so you're going to get some nice roll out of that. So, those things are all different. One thing that we have here that's kind of like insider, like kind of local knowledge, if you will, especially the courses along the North Scottsdale corridor along the McDowell Mountains, we have what we call the valley effect. And it really comes into effect when you're putting. So the everything kind of basically slopes from the McDowell Mountains towards downtown Phoenix. And you have to be mindful when you're putting of where those two landmarks are, right? Like really like Pinnacle Peak and the McDowell Mountains and downtown Phoenix, the skyscrapers down there. You got to keep an eye where those are, because, it can make a putt break more or break less. It just depends.
So you just need to do a bit of research on how to play golf in Phoenix before you get out there.
Yeah, yeah. One thing I wanted to throw out that when people come here for the first time, like you said, they should keep in mind when they're playing, because I guarantee you at some point they're going to hit their ball in the desert. We have what's called – we call it the desert rule. It's a local rule, and basically you get within two clubs of where the ball entered the desert, you can take a drop. It's a one-stroke penalty to take a drop, because you do not want to be walking out there looking for your ball. If you can see it, scrape it up and put it on the grass, do that, but – the ground's rocky. You're going to damage your club. You don't want to do that. It's not worth it. There are rattlesnakes and the cactus. I was on Instagram the other day, and I saw this guy, and I felt so bad for him, because he was standing. His ball was like at the base of a Cholla cactus, and for whatever reason, he thought he was going to play it as it lie. And he was swinging and ended up with like five or six of those Cholla pods like stuck in the back of his hand and his arm. And I'm like, you just ruined your trip, dude. Like, what are you doing?
No. I've been victim of that myself. I know exactly what that feels like. It is not fun, but like you said,
no
time to be a hero. No time to be a hero.
That's right.
Just leave the ball, drop another one. So So, yeah, just real quick, you know, as long as you're on, you know, talking about some of these marquee courses, like you've mentioned Wecopah, that inevitably comes to the top of many conversations that I have with friends or people thinking about going to the desert, you know, wondering where to go play. Wecopah, actually the two courses out there, the Choya and the Saguaro, are two of the best courses you can play anywhere, let alone in the desert. And then, of course, everyone wants to play TPC Stadium course, right?
For sure.
Every year. So, you know, given those, you know, what are some of the other, quote, marquee courses that really should be on, a first-timer's list if they're going to Scottsdale?
Okay. I mean, you've got a ton of options. There's over 50 golf courses within the city limits of Scottsdale. We got 200 in the metro area. So there's plenty to choose from.
Like you said,
Wecopah, those two golf courses are fantastic. I love them. And the unique thing about them is there's no homes. It's on the Fort McDowell, Nation land. And they don't have homes. There's no development around them. You're just in the desert playing golf. It feels really good. TPC, here's something that your listeners should keep in mind. You know, everybody's seen TPC on TV during the Phoenix Open, right? The Waste Management Phoenix Open. And that look, like 16th hole in particular, where it's in the stadium, and you've done this, Robert, like you walk through that tunnel and you go to the tee and you hit that shot, it's crazy cool, right? Like that's a bucket list kind of moment. But that's up all year. You can do that basically from November to like maybe early to mid-March, you know, and they have to take all that down. Now, it's still a great goal.
They do take it. Okay.
Yeah, they take
the
it down.
The stands do come down at some point. Okay.
And it's still a great – I mean, it's a fantastic golf course. Those holes, they don't – you know, I really like the stretch on the back, like 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. Those are great golf holes. But if you're looking for that bucket list, you know, Instagram moment, you need to come kind of November to late February, early March, maybe even mid-March, depending upon, you know, their schedule that year or whatever. But so others – I would put in that same category, that same tier there. You know, you got the two golf courses at Greyhawk, right? Talon and Raptor. Raptor's hosted PGA Tour events and things like that. True North, we've talked about. Those golf courses, they kind of set the bar for, you know, high-end daily fee golf course in Scottsdale. They were those two golf, Pinnacle and Monument. And they're great. I mean, some of the views from the tees there, you just can't top, right? And then, you know, some of the ones that aren't quite as known but are just as good, you know, you have the two courses of the Boulders, the South and the North. And, I mean, you feel like you're playing through a Flintstone setting or something at the Boulders in places, right?
Yeah.
Like
the
Roadrunner
Coyote
are going to come
out
and chase each other around.
And it's an awesome setting.
There's one a little farther out called Quintero. It's been getting a lot of love from, you know, course raiders and people in the know and stuff like that. It's not in Scottsdale. It's out. It's probably 40 minutes or something like that, kind of west. It's in the north part of the valley, but west of Scottsdale. It's really good. Mm-hmm. Very, very good. You know, another one I think it's a great golf course. It's got a great setting. It's got a really cool kind of golf culture there now, is Papago. Have you ever played Papago?
I did much long ago, and I loved it. It's just one of those.
It's long.
Unknown.
It's big.
Yeah.
What's that?
You never hear about it. It gets no attention. You know, everything else gets all the notoriety, right? So you never hear about it. No.
It's right against those buttes down by the airport. It's not so close to the airport that you're going to be disturbed, but it's down by those buttes down there. And so it's got a great backdrop. The golf course is long. It's really well designed. It's always in good shape. It's usually a pretty good deal. I mean, I think it's one of the best deals in the valley right now, especially at high season. It's where ASU plays. So it's, you know, it's a legit golf course, right? And they just built that new clubhouse, like maybe in the last couple of years, with a great restaurant called Lou's. And I was just down to, you know JD, right? Like John Davis.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah, so I was down there for his celebration of life, you know, a few months ago, and I thought I didn't know what to expect as far as like what the vibe was going to be around the clubhouse once that was over.
Right.
And I'm leaving, and it's like families with their kids and like, you know, young couples and stuff like that, everybody coming down to the golf course to have dinner at the place down there and hang out on the patio and look at the views. It was really cool.
That is cool. Yeah. Yeah. So, well, listen, moving on here, you know, next week, you got a pretty big event coming to town, Final Four.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So when something like that comes to town, you know, you're just coming off spring training. That goes on every year.
Yeah.
You get the occasion of Super Bowl coming to town. You got college bowl games. I mean, how much does that impact or the golfers coming to the area, you know, as far as impacting the economy? Or even
well,
those events
I mean, so
are taking place.
Yeah. Two separate issues with that. Like with the economy, golf's a huge driver for Scottsdale's economy. They just did the golf community here in Arizona, not just in Scottsdale, but in Arizona, did an economic impact study last year, year before. I think it was for data for 21 or two, and they published it last year. And so golf contributes $6 billion or is accountable for $6 billion to Arizona's economy. It's a big deal.
Wow.
I'm trying to look right now to see if I have the numbers on what that means in jobs. I think it's over 60,000 jobs in Arizona. So it's a big deal. It's golf drives and it impacts a lot of things. Not just revenue on the golf course, but hotel revenue, restaurant revenue, home prices, home value, you know, tax revenue, all that kind of stuff. And I'm just going to throw a little, because a lot of people sometimes they worry, they're like, oh, you know, they're in a desert and they have this grass growing and, you know, are they wasting water or not? Golf uses 2% of Arizona's water resources. And in exchange
that's
for that 2%, that's it, 2%. And in exchange for that, you get $60 billion or $6 billion in economic impact. And all of the golf courses north, from TPC north in Scottsdale, those golf courses use, it's a huge percentage. It wavers depending upon the season. But I would say at least half of their water comes from reclaimed effluent water. So it's not even touching drinking water. So that's a good, that's just to say that the golf community in this town are very good stewards of the resource.
Yeah.
Now, as far as...
Go ahead.
What were you going to say?
No, you go ahead and continue on the water resource you're talking about.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. So, but you would ask, like, when we have big events, and really, like, those big events start, it kind of starts with the Barrett Jackson auto auction, right? Like, that's like... Maybe that's at least when I personally feel like the season, as we call it, kicks off, because it goes Barrett Jackson, then you go Phoenix Open, and then you get spring training baseball and on and on. Right?
Yeah. It's like boom, boom, boom. Yeah.
Yeah. Boom, boom. There's always something happening. It's always fun. Something happening. And yeah, it impacts the golfer a lot because things are expensive, but they're also fun. And it's also the best time of the year. So that's the trade-off, right? Like hotel rooms are booked. And restaurants are booked and, you know, all that. But if you're coming, the weather's, you know, it's going to be 68 or 72 degrees and it's going to be sunny and everybody's going to be having a good time and there's always going to be something going on. So that's the trade-off.
Yep.
Let me jump back in.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Let me jump back in, guys, real quick because I have to wrap up. I've got my next guest waiting in the wing, so I've got to cut things off here. But some great information, Jerry. I want to thank you for coming on. Where can the folks get in touch with you if they want to get more information with what you're doing at Communication Links? Is there a website, and how can they get in touch and learn more about what we've been talking about tonight?
It's simply comlinks.com, commlinks.com. And like I said, if you're looking for information on Scottsdale, if you're coming to Scottsdale, need information, experiencescottsdale.com.
Sounds good. Well, Jerry, thank you very much for joining us on our special travel segment. Robert, always a pleasure. And I know you're going to be heading out in a few weeks' time. You're going to be heading over to Thailand on a special golf junket, if you will. I'm sorry. sorry. Somewhere over there. I know you're going over there somewhere. That's right. So you'll be able to come back when you return and tell us all about that.
Well,
but thank you. Yeah, thank you.
All right,
there may
you.
Not.
Thanks
with Benny,
like
you may
care.
Not. All right, thanks. All right. Thanks, guys. All right. That was my co-host and travel expert with Golf Tips Magazine, Robert Kaufman, and, of course, a very special travel guest tonight from Comlinks, communication links, rather. You can go to comlinks.com as their website. Jerry Rowe is the Vice President of Brand Management. All right, I'm excited to have my next guest, Bobby Steiner. He is the Director of Instruction, of Golf Instruction, rather, at Horseshoe Bay Resort. And let me tell you a little about his passion, of course, is teaching this great game of golf. Is very evident, as is enthusiasm for his student success. Bobby's teaching philosophy is simple. Every student is different. Some are willing to put in hard work, often at the sacrifice of other endeavors. And for their efforts, should expect to make some real progress. Others, equally important to him, want a little more than just the confidence to play with other golfers. Most are somewhere in between the two. But not, no matter the goal, it continues to bring him a great deal of joy to help every student reach the level to which they aspire. So please welcome the Director of Golf Instruction at Horseshoe Bay Resort out in Texas, Mr. Bobby Steiner.
Hey.
Bobby, welcome to Golf Talk Live. How are you?
Thank you so much. I'm so glad to be here. This is going to be fun.
Yeah, it's going to be gun a good time, and thank you for coming on and doing this show. And so I always like to do this with everybody. You know, I can only talk a little bit through the intro, because otherwise I'll waste all the time. So I like to give my guests as much time as they'd like to talk about different things. So let's start off. Golf means what to you, and how did you get started in this game?
Well, you know, to say golf is the game of life might be a bit of a stretch, but it certainly mirrors life in many ways. And anybody who plays a game can think on that for just a moment, come up with a million examples of why that's true. And so it's ever changing. It's certainly challenging, as hard as you want to make it, and it's never easy for very long. And so from the moment I got my first taste of it, I didn't start until I was 20 years old, which, as you can probably imagine, that's late among aspiring golf professionals. But it was just so exceedingly difficult that I couldn't believe it. Yet it was something I felt like if I put in the time, which I will gladly do because I couldn't get enough of it, then things might come around for me. And so I didn't turn professional until I was 28. It's been a great ride along the way. And I can tell you, it's great to get this, you know, the way I make a living, to get to share this game with other people.
And you know, I think we all, I've been in the business now as a teacher professional for 30 plus years. So you know, I've got some snow on the roof, as they say. So I've been around for a little while too. Right. You know, I was introduced to the game, much earlier by my father. I was about 7 years old when I really sort of understood. I mean, I think I was a little bit younger than that the first time I picked up a club, but. It's interesting, and you're right. You're exactly right. It does mimic. I've said that, you know, my whole career, my whole life, that golf and life mimic one another. There's so many crossovers that it's actually ridiculous when you think about it. But it's true, and I know that I think when you really understand this game and you put it in perspective, it's not just about hitting a little white ball around the golf course. There's so many other lessons that can be taken from it, and you're welcome to, you know, to maybe share one or two that you've experienced in your life and in your golfing career.
You know, it's funny you say that, because if you ever try to speak to a person who doesn't play golf and try to communicate to them the little things that make this game tick, that make you have such a passion for it, they'll never understand it. You've got to play the game in order to see it. And so much of it has to do with, you know, overcoming doubt and uncertainty. And on the days when you can actually play well, on a day that you actually really meant a lot to you, and you can on that day rise to the occasion and play well, it is as fully momentous to you, the individual, as a tour player, you know, winning his first tournament, for instance, getting over the hump. I mean, that's the thing about the game, is it's really exactly the same for every single one of us. And, you know, that putt that finally turns the trick, where you finally beat your friend for the first time in 30 attempts, is just
right.
As meaningful for you as can be granted in the entire game of golf. You've reached the pinnacle at that point. And so it's always been a pleasure to get to spend time with people. You know, when I started playing golf, I walked the golf course a lot. And for me, it was, the game was certainly challenging. But that whole getting to know you thing that was afforded during that time was great. You don't have to know anything about the other person necessarily to have a good time with them and enjoy the same game. It's like everything else fades to background when you're out on the golf course. And it's been a tremendous source of satisfaction. As I say, not just to teach, but to get to share with other people.
Yeah, it's a unique situation because, you know, you get to sort of, you know, especially, you know, obviously we have our maybe a regular group that we play with or have played with, but sometimes, especially, you know, when we're first learning the game, you kind of piggyback on somebody else's group, maybe a twosome you get joined with. And it's amazing the different people and you get to learn a little bit about their life story. And I'm not talking from a teaching profession. I'm just talking as somebody going out and playing on the weekends or what have you. So you get to learn a lot about different people and you get to learn a lot of interesting things, not just about their life story, but how they handle themselves under pressure. Because, I mean, you and I can attest to this. Golf can really, you know, raise up the cooker, if you will, the pressure meter when you get out there, especially when you're first learning the game. But you get to learn a lot about how people handle themselves. And that goes to your point earlier about really that crossover from life is if they're handling them that way on the, you know, themselves on the golf course, it's a pretty good indication they might be handling themselves that way in real life situations. What are your thoughts there?
You're absolutely right. You know, so much is revealed about a person by the way they conduct themselves on the golf course, because there are plenty of opportunities if someone is looking for them to sort of dive into self-absorption, to really show the rest of the world that they don't care much about themselves. At the same time, there are those people you play with who will always spend the extra minute or two looking for your ball so that it won't be lost, or do things that convenience others, that are always in pursuit of play. They're not thinking of themselves, but thinking of themselves as just a small piece in this bigger operation. So that is all evident to any sort of an astute observer right away about someone. There is no way you could play 20 rounds of golf with someone and not have a real idea of what type of person they are, and not just the golfer, but what type of person they are. It is, there's no way to hide it. It will be revealed. But so if you look at it like that, it's a real opportunity for someone who conducts themselves well to distinguish themselves in the crowd. And that's for sure. And there are lots of players, you know, the people often think that, well, I'm not a good golfer, so therefore I can't play with all these experienced players because I'll hold them up, thinking that, you know, unskilled and slow would be the same thing. And they're not. That you can, if you are in pursuit of play all the time and you're not trying to tell a story when it's your turn and you're always, every move you make is in pursuit of play, you can play with anybody. And I just think that's a wonderful thing. What other game is there that is so well handicapped that makes it possible, really, for any person to have their day and to have it somewhat regularly?
You know, it's interesting that you say that. Just on a quick side note, you know, when I would go up to, you know, a course, not one that I was, you know, necessarily teaching out of or anything, but if I would go there and I would, you know, ask to be put in a group, I would always ask, and not for the reasons some people might think, I would always ask, is there a women's group, you know, a couple of women or three women? And I said, let me join with it. And the reason why I would do that, and again, it's not for reasons of, hey, you know, I want to work, you know, get together with these ladies. It was because they were much more humble. I didn't have to worry about, you know, egos out in the golf course. And to be quite honest, more often than not, they were a lot more fun to play with because they were, you know, they were a little bit intimidated, especially if they were newer to the game. But they would relax after a little while. You know, we would joke around, have a few laughs, and talk about, you know, if they had kids, talk about the kids, whatever, and just make them feel comfortable. They were a lot more fun than getting these guys that, you know, kind of puff up the chest. And, I used to drive the ball, you know, 275 yards, but you know, my game's a little shy, so I may not hit him that good. So the excuse train would start rolling down the track, right? And you know what I'm talking about. So it always makes it very interesting. And that's not to say that I don't, you know, didn't jump on with some guys too, but it was always a lot more fun with the ladies. It was always an interesting conversation. So tell us about, I want to bring this up and then we're going to talk about Horseshoe. You wrote a book, you authored a book called Muni, A Lifetime of Lessons. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes. Well, that came off. So I learned to play. I had a pretty unique upbringing in golf. And I started playing golf at a place called Muni. Every place has a Muni. Asheville Municipal Golf Course in Asheville, North Carolina. Now, if anybody wants to just Google Muni, the documentary, there is, I don't know, it's a 78-minute documentary out there on that particular course. Well, what made it unique was it was the one course that finally – started letting African-American golfers play there. And it was in sometime in the 50s, but they only got to play once a week. And so as things were at that time, it became known, you know, as the Black Course. because that rubbed some people wrong, and it really became a golf course.
Sure.
Predominantly African-American. Well, when I joined in 1990, that's when I started playing golf. I was 20 years old, and it was $250 a year to play there. Well, I didn't see color. I didn't care. It wasn't anything to me, even though I'm the only guy, only one guy walking around for the most part, and I was there every hour of the day. I waited tables at night and played golf all day for 8 years until I turned pro. Well, I had a pretty amazing cast of characters with whom I had had the pleasure of learning. And so in the year 2001, I started writing a column called Golf, Heart, and Soul, and it was my stories of my many walks and the lessons I learned from those guys. And so I took some liberties with actual accounts of things that took place there to make them instructional. So mm-hmm. my whole thing was tell stories to teach. And about a year into that, paper after paper after paper, picked up the column, was running it weekly, and then a New York literary agent approached me and said, let's do the book. And so that came out in 2004, and it's been a real source of satisfaction for me. And it's in now in its fourth print, and it's been fun to reach golfers and entertain them, because that's the thing. Here you just read it's vignettes, a collection of 56 short stories, each of which is specific to a certain area of the game, and also which features all these characters. And so that's and it has a chronological thread in that it's 1990 in the beginning and it's 1998 at the end. And so there is some suspense that builds throughout.
Well, and you know, that makes for interesting reading, is to learn. You know, I like the fact you say it's sort of a cast of characters, and that, like I said, that's what's really is interesting about this game. You know, I can remember, you know, some years ago, unfortunately she's no longer with us, but my older sister, you know, never understood, you know, I don't get, you know, chasing this white ball. And I got so mad at her. I was watching, believe it or not, I was watching the Masters, and she kept interrupting me. I don't get it. I don't understand. And, you know, and had never played obviously before. And I finally turned to her. I said, listen, you got to quit doing that. Have you ever played the game? No. Have you ever gone to the driving range? No. I said, well, then stop talking about it until you go up and give it a try. You know, then you can complain all you want. And make a long story short, she got with a gentleman at the time, and who was an avid golfer, and he convinced her to do just that. And the next thing you know, she's walking in with a full set of clubs and several outfits and a couple of pairs of golf shoes. And I said, what the heck is this? And she says, well, I'm taking up golf and I'm learning to play. So we connected her with, I wasn't going to teach her because I knew that would be a nightmare, but she got connected. I love my sister. May she rest in peace. But no, I just knew that was not going to happen. So, and it's not, you know, I could have done it very easily and not gotten out of hand or anything. But so she worked with a very good friend of mine who's also a teacher professional. And up until, you know, the moment she could no longer do it, you know, she played and just loved the game. And it was like a complete 180. So you never know, you know, you never know until you get out there. She got bitten by the bug and she had the wardrobe to match. So, but, you know, it's interesting, you know, just how things can change. Let me ask you from a professional standpoint, what's the best part of being a golf pro for you, particularly as the director of instruction at Horseshoe? So I want you to talk about, from a personal standpoint, what is it about being in that realm, if you will, that you really love about the game? I know you touched on a little bit of it. And now you're, you know, director of golf instruction at Horseshoe. What's exciting for you about your job where you are now? So talk about, you know, what you'd like overall about being a pro, and then what particularly do you like about your job at Horseshoe?
Well, and those are two different questions, and I'll start with the first one there. The thing I love about, let's think of it sort of succinctly in that I get to talk about all people, you know, look me up and seek my presence so that I can talk to them about something that I can't shut up about anyway. I mean, that's a pretty big decider right there, right? You're going to pay me to do something I would do even if I wasn't getting paid. Oh my gosh, it's the best job in the world.
Right.
But the other thing is this is a big deal to a lot of people, and that is that it's hard. And you know, you show me a good golfer, and I'll show you someone who's put up with a lot of pain, a lot of agony, a lot of disappointment. And some people can't get through that. And they beat themselves up. They feel like they're, you know, that every time they miss a short putt, the entire world passed them by. And it's not for everyone in that most people, some people can't get through those. I call it the first 2,000 balls. If you get through those first 2,000 balls, most of the horrific stuff is gone. At least you're hitting the ball now. But you can't skip that part of the process. But in answer to the second part of that question, what do I love about Horseshoe Bay? Oh my gosh, this place is heaven.
Yeah.
So when I had this job opportunity come up back in 2018, Anthony Holder, our director of golf, he and I were talking on the phone, and he was saying Horseshoe Bay, Texas, and I'm going, Bay? So what is it on the Gulf? Where to Horseshoe Bay? I thought I knew about every 72-hole facility in the country, especially one, you know, of this quality. And so when they scheduled me to come audition for the part and for the job, and that really involved giving members a clinic to see what they thought, because up to this point there was never a director of golf instruction at this property, which is amazing. It was sort of, you know, I would say up to this point untapped, was becoming more and more and more a real place to get golf lessons. And as you may know, we've got a teaching academy. We just broke ground on it on January 19th, and it's up and coming. And so what do I love about being here? It's just the ideal place at a time when it's on the upward trajectory.
I'm going to get you to talk about in a few minutes about some of the changes. Always been a lot of money recently was invested to make some changes there. I'll get you to touch on a little bit about that. But, you know, I want to just go back real quick. Something that I mentioned in your bio, which is really kind of interesting, and I want to ask you to get your honest opinion about this. You make the comment that every student is different. And that is so true. And I think for a long time, and would you agree with this, that for a long time, and again, every industry evolves. I mean, even golf, we've evolved as teacher professionals to approach things, you know, differently as we, you know, progress through our careers. But you think for a while that one of the issues that we had as professionals is that we tended to put everybody kind of in the same box. Maybe not everybody did, but for a while as an industry, I think, you know, we were kind of, everybody was doing the A swing. Everybody was kind of, and you think that sort of revelation that people said, you know what, wait a minute, this guy is different from me and that girl over there is different from me. We've got to do a different approach. What are your thoughts there? Do you think that was a problem earlier on in golf, that we were sort of putting everybody in the same box as far as teaching, or do you not agree with that?
Well, I think anyone here as instructors, what we've got, you know, what we've all got to come to grips with is what is going to work for this guy it may leave the person next to them absolutely unresponsive. And that serves not only as the general philosophy, like, you know, the stack and tilt or the this or that or whatever school you try to, you know, whatever Bible you're trying to speak from, but also just to how people learn, how people talk. I mean, that's why it's a little bit tricky to teach sometimes if you don't play your cards right, 6 or 8 people of varying abilities in the same clinic. Now you can do it and you can make it happen, but sometimes there's little conflicts because the way you want to say that to this person over here is completely different than this other person over here. And so you've got to speak very much along general lines. And so I think there's a couple things. The more you teach, obviously, the better you can handle anything. But also the greater number of teachers who you've spent time around. You know, my first 2 years, I was the only voice I heard. I was kind of like singing in the shower, and I thought my voice sounded pretty good. I was the only voice I'd ever heard. And when I started working with, I joined Golf Digest schools, the ESPN golf schools. There were 21 of us in the country for Golf Digest and 24 at ESPN. And we'd meet every year and do nothing for 8 days, but watch one another give presentations, and you go, my goodness, I used to give a putting presentation like this. That guy just blew it out of the water, and I'm going to steal that. And so everybody's material became a best of series from all the other pros with whom they've had the great privilege of working and listening and training. And so that's another thing. You got to be around other teachers. You've got to see other people teach, because otherwise you're just, you know, it seems to me blatantly, you know, not, you know, taking advantage of a resource that's out there if you can manage it.
Great point. And I think as we evolve as an industry, I think we've started to recognize, and again, you're right. I mean, different folks maybe preach from a different Bible, as you put it. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I think what obviously had to be recognized at some point is you're going to get some students that are going to be a little glassy eyed and whatnot and say, I don't get that, or I don't understand. Like, for instance, you know, some people are more visual learners, some kinesthetic, some, you know, others. So, you know, when you recognize that, so yeah, in a group setting or lesson, group lessons, it can be more challenging than a one-on-one because obviously you have to recognize that everybody's different. So I was just curious about that because, you know, I think it's interesting what, in some ways, what's the changes that are being made and how it's being adopted. So I want to talk a little bit about the Horseshoe Bay Resort. Just for the folks that maybe are not familiar with it, for those that have been maybe living under a rock for a while, Horseshoe Bay Resort is one of America's largest golf resorts and is what they call the original Texas Lakeside Resort destination, about 45 minutes from Austin. And it is on more than, and I blew me away when I first time I ever heard about this, but on about 7,000 acres. I mean, that's a big, that's a big resort.
And that doesn't even count the lake, yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's not even counting the leg. That's just along the shoreline. You guys, meaning, and I'll say HBR for short, has invested about $100 million in the property, wide renovations and new construction going on. You touched on one of the things, is that, the Academy, which is a plan to open up this fall. Talk a little bit about that. You know, that's exciting. What's happening? What are some of the changes and what's coming in the months and whatnot down the road?
Oh, my goodness. I've got to say, this is just an absolute game changer. Because it, up to this point, where we've been teaching has been, you know, shared range space, which is in general the public. So to have a private area and to have a private area that will be at the caliber of this one that's, you know, being worked on, we're going to have two indoor hitting bays, both equipped with TrackMan technology, and then also eight outdoor hitting bays will be armed with Top Tracer range, you know, the same thing they use Top Golf. And it also, you know, a couple of greens, a bunker, 40,000 square feet of land of grass tee. And so it's just going to be a great place to go get a private lesson, and we won't be, limited by cold weather or hot weather or rain or anything like that. In fact, it'll serve for those people in the sweltering heat of July might go, you know what, I don't know if I really want a lesson, but that's one thing you can do indoors right now. Let's go do it. And so it's really going to be a shot in the arm to our entire, golf instruction program. It's going to be
And that's so important because obviously, you know, weather changes and things like that. And you need to have, I mean, nowadays people want, especially when they're coming to a top rated resort like this, they want to feel like the red carpet's coming out. And as I said, the changes that have happened and technology coming out now, it's really, you know, I wish I could roll the dial back some ways. I mean, I like, you know, some of the olden days, but at the same time, you know, it's really getting exciting in our industry now because there's so much technology coming in and things that you couldn't even imagine. And I like, you know, you mentioned Anthony Holder, who, of course, is the Horseshoe Bay Director of Golf Operations. You know, he talks about really what you guys are bringing to the table is essentially everything you could get as a tour player at a tour van will be available to the members and guests at that facility. So, and, you know, talking about club repair room and, an area for, you know, shaft, grip, club head, that sort of thing from some of the big manufacturers like Titleist, TaylorMade, and Callaway. So everything that these guys are getting on tour is now being brought to your resort. So the members and guests are going to have, you know, a lot of the same stuff that the big guys, if you will, are getting access to. So that's got to be exciting in itself, right?
Absolutely. You know, think about our game in general. And what technology brings to it. I realize that sometimes you can overdo it with technology, this and that, but what a cool thing for those who enjoy it and can really get, the ultimate experience. This is a science we know about, club repair and fitting and all these things. And it's the same science, whether someone's fitting you or me or a beginner or a tour player. And it can be brought to the individual. You want a golf club that is made for you. Come hit some shots. We will look at your numbers, and we can do that precisely beyond mere guesswork. Like it was 15 years ago. You know, it used to be that if you bought a set of a driver off the shelf, it was like a suit. If you bought a suit off the rack, it might fit one of us, but it's not going to fit all five of us. Same thing with the driver. Before
right.
You might find that one driver that gives you 40 more yards, and no one can explain why. Well, now they do. Now we know how to do it, and so it's a. It's a great thing that we'll be able to do club fittings there. And speaking of technology, you know, I can't imagine now. I do just quick videos on my phone on the V1 software, which I'm sure you're familiar mm-hmm. with. And it is compared to 15 years ago, when it wasn't readily available, you couldn't just send them something quick. Now, the trust aspect of all this was never quite there. Hey, look, you're moving 6 inches off the ball. I am not moving 6 inches off the ball. Yes, you're moving 6 inches. Well, now you show them on video. And it is just the most amazing thing when they go, oh, my word, I had no idea. So you get just a little bit more trust because, as you know, feel isn't real. But it used to be we had to convince them something of something they knew in their to their toes they weren't doing. And so it almost felt like a battle a little bit. And that's been nice. You can overdo it with some of the software these days, but there's a certain amount that does ratchet it all up just a level over yesteryear.
Yeah, I remember the I hate to use this terminology, but back in the day when they used to have a lot of the pros used to have before the technology of the phones were what they are now, but they would have one of those little Canon camcorders, handhelds, and you would just sort of shoot the video, and then you'd have to upload it, or you'd have to do it was more complicated process than what it is now. Now the technology in the phones is rivals NASA's supercomputer. I mean, it's just amazing.
It's
the technology. Yeah, it is. It blows you away.
Yeah.
Yep. Go ahead.
I was going to say, for 90% of the people, just a quick shot on video, drawing a couple lines, is all the more they need. It's not like, it's just perfect for me. I'm not looking for a way to make the simplicity of that, any better. It's great as it is right now, just that V1 app.
Yeah, and it is important. You're exactly right. Because, you can talk to a student until the cows come home trying to explain something. Or send a message to them. But the video just opens the door. And the more advanced and the clarity of video that can be taken now and the ease and the quickness of it, and then obviously the software like V1 and others that have kept up the pace just make it so easy to be able to get that message across. And as, a director of instruction like yourself, you've got to be able to do that. You've got resort guests coming in. You've got members coming in. They don't want to wait. Well, I can get to you tomorrow or I can get this. They want that action now. They want to know, hey, what's going on with my game? Now you can just literally with a click of the camera on the phone, and you can make the adjustments and changes and show them right there in real time what's going on, if you choose to do that. So it just brings a whole, plethora of technology at your fingertips. As I mentioned, you guys investing $100+ million, not just bringing a new facility in, but obviously – including new guest rooms, suites, multi-room units, that sort of thing, as well as obviously renovation to the golf courses, improved. I don't know how you guys can get any better than you already are. I mean, you guys got so much now. But what are some of the other things that maybe you can touch on a little bit? What's happening with some of the golf courses? Is it just sort of a makeover or is there expansion? What's going on with some of the courses?
Well, you're capturing it just right. It's hard to even express in a few simple words how much, things have improved. Now, I got here in 2018, and I believe in 2016, we have four 18-hole golf courses, three Robert Trent Jones Senior courses that goes back as far as 1971, Slick Rock, and then sprinkle a couple more in, every decade or so after that. We have four 18-hole courses now. And three of the four have been completely renovated since 2016. The last one was finished 2 or 3 years ago. And so that's pretty recent as a golf course life goes. It's just been in the last half dozen years, all three of them. And I wasn't here before, but it's clear to everybody I've spoken to that it's been tremendous in the way that they the little subtle changes they make. But then just the going over in general was something that was much needed and much appreciated. Now they're redoing all the comfort stations out on the golf course, the new cart barns, we've got my teaching center, everything that can do just in the last, during COVID, probably finished in 2021, our brand new clubhouse, which won brand new clubhouse of the year for the entire United States. Our membership director got to go out to California to receive the award for that. And it's just, the place is beautiful and it's, but more than anything, there's always something going on around you that's being upgraded, and so that's what's satisfying to me is to realize that, hey, I see a big difference between now and, you know, 3 years ago. And I can see that from, you know, 3 years from now, it's going to be even greater.
Yeah, I concur 100%. And you know, what's nice too is obviously, and we'll direct them to the website here in a little bit, but so they can look, do a little more deeper dive. But obviously you guys have some great package deals. It's not just solely members, but there's guests, resort guests and things as well. So there's lots of opportunities for packages for individuals, couples, you know, juniors, whatever you want. You've got a whole plethora of things there. Maybe you can just touch on a little bit about that. And talk about the lake, because I think that's something too that, you know, when you mentioned in the beginning how, you know, what is it, on the golf or where is it? It's on a lake. So there's other activities there besides just golf. I mean, obviously we love golf and we want to promote golf, but there's a lot of other things to do on there. Maybe you could talk a little bit about that as well.
You know, when we market to, you know, the general public, we are free to and benefit by marketing along the general lines. In other words, there's going to be something for somebody, for every person, member of the family, to want to come out here for. You don't, we don't just have to narrow our, you know, our target market to golfers, because we have an award-winning spa. We have the marina, which with jet skis and, you know, and ski, you know, ski boats and everything you want to do out on the lake. We've got all the different pools and the wineries that are nearby. And so the kids club, we've got the Jungle Kids Club, and they'll, you know, the place where these kids can stay entertained for hours on end. And so there's whoever receives the ad, whoever sort of is the beneficiary of our marketing efforts is, you know, upon seeing what we have here, it's going to appeal to every a member of the family. And so it's just a great place for the entire family to come. And it feels like life slows down when you're out here. This is a, you know, it's only 45 minutes from Austin, but boy, if someone just dropped you here and said, all right, open your eyes, where do you think you are? You would have no idea. You're out in the middle of a beautiful part of the world with all this that seems like Candyland, everything you want to do here. And if you're a golfer, it's triply so. And but not just golfers, it's for the entire family.
Well, and that's what makes it appealing in today's market, because again, you know, it's great to have those buddy trips and you want to go places, but a lot of couples want to do things. And certainly a lot of couples are playing golf together now. More women, as we both know, have gotten into the game. I mean, there's been something like in the last year or a couple of years, you know, 800,000 new women have joined golf, and that's a big number. So they're getting into the game now at all levels, not just beginners, but at higher levels as well. And also, you know, female business executives are taking advantage of sort of the corporate approach and saying and recognizing that golf is a valuable business tool. So you're really opening up a market that has not been tapped into. COVID certainly is as tragic, and I've said this many times, as tragic as it was a real big shot in the arm for golf for two reasons. One, obviously, it was one of the only things that you could go out and do in public. That you don't have to worry about distancing and whatever. But it opened a door to people that had never played this game before, knew nothing about golf other than what they maybe occasional commercial they saw for a PGA or LPGA event, came out and saying, hey, this isn't so bad. I'd like to learn more about it. So it's really opened the doors for a lot of individuals that maybe, you know, never even thought to go down that path, right?
Oh, yes. You know, it seems to me that golf, more people, you know, let's face it, it's a hard game, and some people, you know, at one time regarded it as, you know, a wealthy person's game only. You know, they'd had this, you know, with some people that had these preconceived ideas about it. But it seems to me like more than anything else, I can sense a shift in the attitude, and that is it seems like more people realize that golf is just a good thing to do. It's a fun way to spend your time around good people. And it's hard, it's challenging, but there's also no requirement. Anybody can play. You just, it seems to be something that more people are more open-minded about starting from the very beginning. And what a great thing. What a great thing if you're not, you know, stuck with, you know, the stigma that it's just for certain numbers of people, but rather it's opening up. And I'm glad that women are playing it, and there's so many, you know, they're good organizers, right? I mean, they have some about the Women Golf Association, things like that. They have a great knack, it seems like, no matter where I go. Some of them are bigger, some of them are smaller. I'm talking about the WGAs from various parts of the country. But they all share one thing in common, and that is they know how to make a party. And so they nine hole events and things that just, you know, the guys would go, well, I'd never even think about doing that. Glad you ladies are liking it, though. It's fun. And so it's I think women have come on to a great degree in the last, maybe since COVID, but it seems like even over the last 10 years.
Oh, before that. Easily before that. I mean, guys have to give it to them. Where do you think Wine and Nine came from? Didn't come from us.
From the West.
I mean, exactly, we never even thought of half of this stuff. Right, exactly. So you're exactly right. They bring so much. And, listen, let's be honest. I mean, and I don't want to go down too far down that rabbit hole, but, they have done a lot with golf fashion on both sides. I mean, women have always been fashion forward. That's something that they're interested in by nature. They just love to get dressed up and look their best. But they've actually really, it's transcended into the men's game because, again, I don't care whether you're more of a traditionalist or you're more fashion forward, whatever. They have had an influence on the men's market by far. I mean, a lot of the designs coming out now for all age groups have really taken a certain inspiration from the women's market. So we owe them a debt of gratitude because we're not playing the same and wearing the same stuff that we, did 30 or so years ago. We've got some more options, and that's because of them. It's not because of us. I can guarantee it.
You just hit it on the head. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and this is, again, it's become a much more inclusive game for everybody. It's something you can all, and yeah, it's going to frustrate the dickens out of you at times. We all know that, but great facilities like what you have at Horseshoe can make life a little bit easier and a lot more fun. And that's really what it's all about. And so for somebody in your position, you've got to just really get excited about it each day going into work, saying, what can I do to make it more fun for the people, not just the members, but for the guests as well? Maybe you can touch on that. What do you try to do? What do you, when you get up in the morning and you see that opportunity as you, roll up the roadway there and you get into your job, what do you say to yourself? How can I make it more fun for my students today?
Oh, that's the simplest thing in the world, and it's a guiding philosophy. And that is, let's think about this for just a moment. If you take two golfers who play golf together, they're both, one's a 12 handicap, the other's a 15 handicap, and they play all the time, and they belly up at the bar afterwards, and they start talking, and Joe and Fred, and Joe says, Fred, I haven't made a putt, outside of 3 feet in the last 6 months. And in return, he says, well, I didn't do this. And then he says, well, I didn't do this. In other words, you got two guys having a conversation where neither one of them makes even the smallest reference to what the other guy just said about his own game, but instead immediately brings the whole conversation back to his game. Every person is most concerned with their own game. And so when, as a golf professional, when I go to work, I am the teammate of a person who doesn't typically have a teammate. In a game where no one cares about his game, I am doing nothing but spending my entire hour or 2 hour or half day, or depending on what it is, trying to see, to get to the bottom of what he's doing and how he can become better. And that makes it, that pursuit, if you just approach it from that angle, you can't fail, because, nothing's perfect. And not every first approach is the right approach. But if you stick with it, most people realize that, hey, we're making strides together. Let's just stay with this. Then it becomes something more than just a game. It's a bond you have, There's a certain amount of when someone's taking a golf lesson, they have to submit a little bit to the teacher, right? You have to trust them.
Sure.
Because if you don't trust them, it's not a good experience at all. And so there's got to be a period in there where you spend more time listening and asking questions and trying to deduce what you can deduce by the conversation, and not be just absolutely certain about the approach you're going to take, because that's the way you've always done it. But instead, actually tailoring it for the individual. But you can't do that. And people know whether they're being listened to. That's the bottom line. People know whether they're part of this or they're not. And so it's not something you can fake. And so as I talk about the wonderful virtues and benefits of getting into their world, it's not something you can just say you are. You got to really do it. Spend the time, but that effort is worth the reward.
Exactly, and the truth of the matter is, the consumers today are much more savvy when it comes to, they may not fully understand the game, but they know, when they're you know, learning something that's going to help improve. And this is what I say. And again, I'm not knocking, you know, anything in the industry. I mean, everybody's got their part to play, but they know when they see training aids and things like that, they know that it, there's obviously an element of marketing behind it and that, and everybody's got the best and that sort of thing. They're becoming smarter. They're educating themselves. I mean, the internet has been both a blessing and a curse for all businesses. I mean, it's great to have access to information, but at the same time, sometimes too much information can cause an overload. So you've got to help filter that out. And so, it, you know, it works both ways. It helps. But yeah, there's nothing more, I think, exciting for a golf coach to see in their students or on their students' face or in their eyes that aha moment when they understand something. They've got it now. It makes sense to them because then it makes your process that much easier, right?
Oh, man. There is no, you know, some problems are so glaring that, you know, as a golf professional, yeah, you sort of smile and you go, okay, as soon as I fix his career, he's going to hit the longest shot he's ever hit in his life. And so because his left hand grip was so weak and on top and his thumb was extended and he just never had anything but an open club face and he's cutting across the ball, you go, man, if I fix his grip and show him how to cock his wrist at the top, he's about to launch a missile out of here that he's never had anything. And so when you know you've had enough experience where you know that's about to happen because of what the particular lesson is, some things are easier to teach than others, but then you watch them do it and they look at you like you just returned their lost child and go, oh my gosh, I didn't think I could hit a golf ball like that. And they're just as excited as can be. That there's nothing better than that. There's nothing better than that because you also realize there's a good chance they would have never discovered that on their own, and certainly not from their buddies. Because their buddies don't know. The buddies are telling them what happens to be working for them in their game right now. It has nothing to do with this other guy, you know.
I know. I've had so many friends over the years. Most of them have fortunately listened to me. I have a couple particularly that didn't, and I forewarned them. I said, whatever you do, guys, don't teach your wife how to play. Let them go to a professional. And I said, the quickest way to the divorce court is to try and teach your wife how to play the game. You need to have somebody that knows what they're doing. I said, because your game's not that great. So why are you now going to do instill all the bad habits you've learned over the years? You know, so, I mean, and partially some of them that came to fruition. So I forewarned them. But anyways, that's here and there. But so I want to, as I mentioned, I'm going to let the folks know how they can get more information. And one of the best ways to do that is to go to the website, and that www.hsbresort.com. That's short for Horseshoe Bay Resort. Again, it's in Texas. Or you can give them a call at 877-611-0112. You can get more information, reservations, all of that good stuff. Learn more. The website, go and look around. There is a lot to look at, a lot of information to absorb. And if you want to get some help with your game and you plan on making a trip there, you want to make sure you connect with the gentleman I've been talking to tonight, and that's their director of golf instruction, Mr. Bobby Steiner. Bobby, thank you very much for coming on the show tonight. I've really enjoyed our conversation, and I would love to have you come back anytime you want.
It would be my great pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
I appreciate it, and much continued success, and I'm going to be planning a trip out your way. I'm going to do my best to make it this year. If not, it'll be next year for sure. So I'll have to talk to Kevin and Carl and see if we can put something together. But definitely want to make a plan out there. I haven't been there yet, and I had a chance to go a couple of years ago, and unfortunately I wasn't able to do that. But I'm going to do my darndest because it looks like a lot of fun, and certainly we'll have a great opportunity to meet you and many of the others in your team. So, but Bobby, thank you very much. Again, much continued success, and thanks for sharing some time with my audience tonight. I know they enjoyed it.
Thank you so much. I'll look forward to your visit out here. We'll go beat it around.
All right. Sounds good. Sounds good.
All right.
Director of Instruction at Horseshoe Bay Resort, Bobby Steiner. Thank you very much. Have a good night. All right. I want to just a couple of quick notes I want to bring to your attention, to the listeners, before I close off. For those of you that were tuning in and you heard the travel segment, we've partnered with a great company, Golf Breaks by PGA Tour, and they are one of the best in putting together some great trips, and we've partnered with them. And as you heard in the lead-in to our travel segment, They've got a great promotion going on right now for not just the Golf Talk Live listeners, but for Golf Tips Magazine as well. If you want to book a trip, you can visit golfbreaks.com. Search out, find a great package for you. And remember, at checkout, you can just enter the promo code GOLFTIPS200 and you can save $200 off your trip. There are some conditions that apply, so you'll have to make sure, or you can give them a call at 877-216-8216 is their number. You can find that on the website as well. But go ahead and book your package. Make sure you use promo code GOLFTIPS200 and you'll get $200 off of your next trip. So visit golfbreaks.com and search out where you want to go. There's all kinds of destinations, not only in the United States, but overseas as well. So definitely you want to check that out. Go to golfbreaks.com. And also I want to bring to your attention as well, this summer, Golf Tips is going back to the Macklemore Resort in Georgia, June 7th to the 9th. For the 2024 Golf Tips Golfs. If you want more information, you can email me directly at editor@golftipsmag.com. That's editor@golftipsmag.com. I can provide you more information, details of the costs and so forth. But that is going to be at the Macklemore Resort, and that is on the top of Lookout Mountain in Georgia. Beautiful views. It's about 2,000 feet up in the air at parts of it, and it's a great location with some great views. There's a brand new Hilton Hotel that has been built right on the edge of the mountaintop, if you will, with some breathtaking views over on the landscape in the distance. And it's fully equipped with a spa and other amenities as well. And that's where you'll be staying when you join us. So if you're interested in attending or getting more information, Golf Tips Golf School at Macklemore Resort, June 7th to 9th, reach out to me at editor@golftipsmag.com, and I will provide you with all of the details. And I hope you join us. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be some great professionals going to be joining me there to help teach, make you a better player, and, of course, have some more fun, and gives you an opportunity to check out their great facility. They've got a lot of great stuff there. They've got a new golf course called The Keep that is going to be opening up, I believe, a little bit later this season, but they got the Highlands, which is open now, and a short course as well. Some great food, great fun, and some breathtaking views pretty much from anywhere on the golf course, so hopefully you can join us. So 2024 Golf Tips Golf School taking place at the Macklemore Resort June 7th to 9th. Again, email me at editor@golftipsmag.com. That's editor@golftipsmag. Special guests this evening. On the Coach's Corner panel, I want to thank Jim Endicott for joining me. Unfortunately, Jamie was not able to make it, so I'm sure she sends her apologies for that, and we'll get her the next time. Also, my golf travel co-host, Robert Kaufman, and special guest of the evening on the travel segment, Jerry Rose, the VP of Brand Management at Communication Links. Again, you can go to comlinks.com as their website to get more information, and if you're interested in maybe heading out to Phoenix, Arizona, Scottsdale area, they can probably give you more information there as well. And obviously, last but not least, the Director of Golf Instruction at Horseshoe Bay Resort, Bobby Steiner. Again, if you go to hsbresort.com, you can learn all about Horseshoe Bay Resort. It's a great facility. As I said, about 7,000 plus acres. It's on a lake. So some definitely boating and whatnot going on, all kinds of things, a world-class spa, everything you can imagine right there and more to come. So check that out. On that note, I want to thank everybody for tuning in to Golf Talk Live. You can tell it's getting late. I will see you next week with another interesting Coach's Corner panel and exciting interview guest. The travel segment will not go next week, but will follow the following week. And I believe, as we discussed, Robert will not be on that one. He's going to be overseas working on a trip. So be sure to join me next week right here on Golf Talk Live. Thanks, everybody, and God bless. Have a great weekend.
Thanks for joining us. We hope you enjoyed this week's broadcast of Golf Talk Live. We'd like to thank this week's Coach's Corner panel, and a special thank you to tonight's guest. Remember to join Ted every Thursday from 6 to 8 p.m. Central on Golf Talk Live.
And be sure to follow Ted on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. If you're interested in being a guest on Golf Talk Live, send Ted an email at ted.golftalklive@gmail.com. This has been a production of the iGolf Sports Network.